Rabbinic Parables by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract: a comparison of the parables of Jesus with the parables of the rabbis in the centuries following the time of Jesus. What are parables? Webster's Third International Dictionary tells us that parables are comparisons or similitudes, or more specifically, usually short, fictitious stories that illustrate a moral attitude or a religious principle. New Testament usage is broader than this, and the parables of the New Testament can run from a few words to a story. They illustrate a point, usually by means of analogy. Normally, parables illustrate by having two levels of meaning. One level is the earthly story, which is the illustration, and the other level is a heavenly meaning, which is what you're trying to illustrate, and the two are connected by one or more analogies that connect the two. Sometimes they're connected by the earthly story being a concrete example of the heavenly meaning. We call these sample parables or paradigm parables. There are about six of these. They're all found in the Gospel of Luke. Parables are still used today, but they were much more common in Jesus' time. Most of the parables we have from the ancient world come from either Jesus or from the Jewish rabbis. We're going to give in this talk three examples of Jesus parables and refer to a few others which you will perhaps be familiar with, and then going to give you a large number of rabbinic parables, though there are many, many rabbinic parables. Parables of Jesus. Various commentators have given different numbers for how many parables of Jesus are recorded in the Bible. This largely due to the question of whether they treat shorter parables as similitudes instead of as parables, things of that sort. I get about 65 parables, not counting repeated ones that show up in more than one gospel, and not counting the acted parables, which are not spoken, but acted out, Jesus' foot washing, cleansing the temple, that sort of thing. We're going to look at three different sorts of Jesus' parables. First of all, the parable of the sower, found in Matthew 13 and parallels in Mark and Luke. Starting verse 3, then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. He who has ears, let him hear. I spent some time discussing this parable in our PowerPoint talk, The Parables of the Kingdom, but just a quick sketch here. The story is basically about a guy scattering seed on a field using what we call the broadcast method. Reaches into a bag of seed and picks up a handful and just throws it with his hands. It varies somewhat, but they usually felt to be on a plowed field. Sometimes perhaps before plowing and plowing afterwards. And then basically the various things that happen to seeds that fall on different types of soil. Some fall on the path, some falls on places where there's a bedrock just a short distance underneath, some fall on places where there another type of plant already there, the thorns, and some falls on good soil. The whole point of this is it's a picture of the reception that Jesus' message is going to receive. He's giving his disciples a little reality check that it's not going to be all jumping on the bandwagon. Parable of the lost sheep, found in Luke chapter 15, and also a parallel in Matthew, Luke 15:3 and following. Then Jesus told them this parable: suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? When he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. And he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I found my sheep. I tell you that in the same way, there'll be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. This parable basically is a response to some of Jesus' opponents who are complaining that he is consorting with the kind of bad characters in their society. And Jesus basically telling them that just as you, if you'd lost a sheep, would be concerned about the lost sheep, even to the relative neglect of the sheep that hadn't strayed. You should not be surprised then that Jesus is doing the same thing, because that's God's view of the matter. There's more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. So again, an analogy between shepherd and sheep, and God and humans, if you like, in this case. Parable of the rich fool is one of these in Luke that are the sample or paradigm parables. He told them this parable, Luke 12:16. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. And he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? And Jesus commented at the end, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God. Well, in this story, we see that we're already dealing with a heavenly meaning. We're dealing with the foolishness of behaving selfishly regarding one's own property, etc. And so we're just getting a sample, if you like. The sample is this rich fool who is obviously an agriculturalist and such, and yet this is a parable for us, even if we're not in agriculture, and even if we're not rich, because if we are ones who store up things for ourselves but are not generous towards God, and that is concerned to be with the things he's concerned with, then we are, after all, fools. Well, those are three samples of Jesus' parables. I'll make reference occasionally to some other ones to illustrate some points here. But we turn to the rabbinic literature. Rabbinic literature is the written material that has survived from the oral tradition of the Pharisees. You remember those were Jesus' opponents, the scribes and Pharisees in the Gospels, and their successors in the first few centuries after the time of Jesus. This material was oral for perhaps a generation or so, was certainly written down by 200 AD in the earliest of these works, the Mishnah, a very condensed compilation of oral tradition. And then this was eventually expanded with explanation and illustration, etc., to become the Jerusalem Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud. And also, we have this material structured in terms of a commentary on different parts of the Old Testament. So that's the rabbinic literature in a nutshell. In the ancient Greco-Roman world, parables occur frequently in the teaching of Jesus in rabbinic literature, but only rarely elsewhere. Over 1,500 rabbinic parables survive, though most of these are later. Only 324 of these date before AD 200. In the examples I'll give you here that follow, some of these are from before 200 and some of these are from afterwards. We start with the parable of the dog and father. A philosopher asked Rabbi Gamaliel, it is written in your Torah, for the Lord thy God is a devouring fire, a jealous God. Deuteronomy 4:24. But why is he so jealous of his worshippers rather than of the idol itself? He said, that is Rabbi Gamaliel, I will parable to you a parable. Unto what is the matter like? It's like a king of flesh and blood who had a son, and the son raised a dog to which he attached his father's name, so that whenever he took an oath, he'd exclaim, by the life of this dog, my father. When the king heard of it, with whom is he angry? His son? Or the dog? Surely he's angry with his son. I give the reference there from the Babylonian Talmud at the bottom of Moda Zerah 54b. Well, what we see going on here is a earthly story of a king and his son, so a prince, and the prince's dog, okay? And that's the earthly story, and the heavenly meaning is the king is God, the son is some human, and the dog would be the idol, and obviously it's the king gets mad at the prince for attaching the name of his father to the dog rather than being mad at the dog. parable of the vestibule, much shorter. Rabbi Jacob said, "This world is like a vestibule before the world to come. Prepare thyself in the vestibule that thou mayest enter into the banqueting hall." So here's the analogy. You've got a banquet hall and then a little a clothing room, we might call it a vestibule, an anteroom, if you like, on the side of it. The idea from the culture basically is that a person is going to a banquet. They want to be properly dressed at the banquet, but the outer garment, they don't want to get dust or dirt on it from walking along the road, and so they carry it with them, and then when they get inside the vestibule, they put the robe on, and then they go into the banquet hall. And Rabbi Jacob says, this world, one in which we live, is like a vestibule before the world to come. What we might think of as heaven or the next life. And so just as this fellow puts on his banqueting robe in the vestibule so that he's ready to enter the banqueting hall, so we prepare ourselves in the in this world for the world to come. So note the earthly part, vestibule and banquet hall. These are analogs to the heavenly part. This world, our life in heaven, and the world to come, heaven. Parable of skillful worker. A king had a vineyard for which he engaged many laborers, one of whom was especially apt and skillful. What did the king do? He took this laborer from his work and walked through the garden conversing with him. When the laborers came for their hire in the evening, the skillful laborer also appeared among them and received a full day's wages from the king. The other laborers were angry at this and said, "We've toiled the whole day while this man has worked but 2 hours. Why does the king give him the full hire, even as to us?" The king said to them, "Why are you angry? Through his skill, he's done more in the 2 hours than you have all day." From the Jerusalem Talmud, Barakot 2:5. Well, we see there basically a picture of the king and the laborers, and that's the earthly picture of the heavenly story of God and humans here on earth. The vineyard is earth, presumably. The laborers are humans doing what they're supposed to be doing for God, if you like. One of them is taken away after working only 2 hours, and yet he gets the full pay. This was actually given, we understand, at a funeral for a rabbi who died young, and basically trying to encourage the people that he would get a comparable reward with those who lived a much longer life. Parable of the short day. The day is short, and the work is great. The laborers are sluggish, and the reward is much, and the master of the house is urgent. Probably looking at harvesting in a field, and the day laborers who've been hired, and this is a short day for some reason, yet there's a lot that needs to be done. The laborers are having trouble getting rolling, but there's going to be a big reward because the master of the house, the owner of the field, is urgent. That's the parable. And again, it's a parable in which the master of the house, in this case, would be God. The laborers would be us. Day would be our lifespan, if you like, and such. Parable of the foolish shipmate. It is said, "Shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation?" Numbers 16:22. What's all this about? Being angry with the whole congregation for just one person's sin. Rabbi Simeon ben Yochai taught a parable. It's like men who were sitting in a ship. One took a borer, a drill, and began drilling beneath his own place. We're to understand this is not a big ship where he's several decks up, but a boat where the wood right under him is the hull of the ship. Huh? This fellow traveler said to him, "What are you doing?" He said to them, "What does that matter to you? Am I not boring under my own place?" They said, "Because the water will come up and flood the ship for us all." So what's going on here? Basically an illustration of the fact that one person doing something wrong can get the whole boat in trouble, if you like. And so one person doing something wrong can get the whole congregation of Israel in trouble. And we see some illustrations of that afterwards in the history of Israel with Achan stealing the gold and silver and the garments at Jericho, and the result was defeat for the Israelites at their next attempt to take a city. parable of the blind and lame caretakers. Antoninus, this would presumably be the Roman emperor in the second century with that name, Antoninus Pius. Antoninus said to Rabbi, the body and the soul can both free themselves from judgment. Thus the body can plead, the soul ascend. The proof being that from the day it left me, I lie like a dumb stone in the grave. And the soul can say, the body ascend. The proof being that from the day I departed from it, I fly about in the air like a bird. He, that'd be Rabbi, said, I will parable thee a parable unto what is the matter like. It's like a king of flesh and blood who had a beautiful orchard which contained splendid figs, and he placed in it two keepers, one lame and the other blind. The lame man said to the blind, I see beautiful figs in the orchard. Come and take me upon thy shoulder, that we may procure and eat them. So the lame man bestrode the blind, procured and ate them. Sometime afterward, the owner of the orchard came and said to them, where are those beautiful figs? The lame man replied, have I then feet to walk with? The blind man replied, have I then eyes to see with? What did he do? He placed the lame upon the blind and judged them both together as one. So also will the Holy One, blessed be he, bring the soul, replace it in the body, and judge them together. Babylonian Talmud, Sanhedrin, 91a. That one's pretty transparent. But the body and soul are here compared to a blind and lame caretakers, if you like. The body blind, if you like, because the body has no soul or spirit to it. It's got no moral character, if you like. And the soul as lame because it can't do anything without the body. And basically saying, well, together they did things and together they will be judged. Well, that's a tour of a few of the parables. Let's say there are over 1,500 of them, and even over 300 in the period before AD 200, and several of these come from that period. And notice that both the parables of Jesus and those of the rabbis share a number of features that can help us understand them. They both work by analogy. They are often what we might call mini-dramas. They make use of caricature, and they tend to use stock or standard metaphors from the Old Testament or Jewish culture. Working by analogy. Jesus' parable of the sower uses analogy between various types of soil and various receptions to the gospel message. The rabbinic parable of the vestibule uses the idea of people putting on their banquet garments in the vestibule to represent our preparing for in this life for the life to come. So it uses an analogy between two rooms in a banquet building, the vestibule and the hall, to represent two lives, this life on earth and the life in the age to come, working by analogy. Many dramas. Jesus' parables of the lost son, the unforgiving servant, and the tenant farmers have multiple characters, a plot, and something of a surprise ending. Lost son, what we call the prodigal son, the younger son is anxious to leave home and it gets his father to split the inheritance and he takes his share and goes and blows it all, etc. So we've got the younger son, the elder son, the father, and of course the farm and the servants and some other people are the multiple characters. The plot is the dissatisfaction and going off and losing all the money, and then the elder brother's reluctance to receive him when he comes back, contrasted with father's, etc. The unforgiving servant is the fellow who owes a king 10,000 talents, an astronomical amount of money, and can't pay it back. And when he begs, the king forgives him, but then he goes out, the servant goes out and nearly chokes one of his fellow servants, who owes him a substantial amount of money, but very trivial compared to that. Then the reaction of the other servants and the reaction of the king who cancels the forgiveness and all of that sort of thing is your surprise ending here. The tenant farmers, a fellow lets out his vineyard to tenant farmers, and then when he sends his servants to collect a part of the produce at the harvest, the tenant farmers mistreat the servants, and finally, he sends his son. They'll respect him, but in fact, no. They say, let's kill the son, then we'll get the vineyard. And surprise, the owner shows up and takes care of them, huh? So we can see examples in those. Some of the longer Jesus parables have multiple characters, some kind of a plot then, and a surprise ending, if you like. So do the remake parables, the skillful worker, we read that one, the foolish shipmate, and the blind and lame caretakers. Caricature, the use of caricature, exaggeration for rhetorical effect. You know how political cartoonists do in exaggerating the features of a person so that we can recognize him. The one cartoonist now puts very big ears on George Bush, another one put a 5 o'clock shadow on Richard Nixon, or big bushy blonde hair on Clinton. Use of caricature, exaggeration for rhetorical effect, can be seen in both the parables of Jesus and those of the rabbis. Mm. Consider Jesus' parable of the tenant farmers, where they do something rather stupid, they think that somehow they can get away with things by beating on the servants and then even killing the son, and perhaps they have judged that the son wouldn't come unless the father had died or something, but still some rather stupid actions, since they don't know that, would be an example of a caricature. Or the Jesus parable of eye surgery, the fellow with the huge beam of wood in his eye is wanting to get a speck out of the eye of somebody else. Striking exaggeration, but it corresponds to our foolishness in thinking we can help other people when we have worse sins ourselves. Consider the rabbinic parables of the blind and lame caretakers, where they think they're going to get away with this thing of stealing the fruit, when presumably they're the caretakers, they're supposed to be watching the place, and they're likely to be suspected. Or the foolish shipmate who is boring the hole under his seat in the ship, huh? A caricature. Stock metaphors. Both Jesus' parables and those of the rabbis use items that are metaphors in the Jewish, in the Old Testament, or the Jewish culture. Some samples. Very frequently, both in Jesus' parables and those of the rabbis, if there's a king present, that's God. Okay, God is represented as a king. Or in other cases, God is represented as a husband or a father. Humans are typically represented in the parables as servants of one sort or another. Israel sometimes represented as the king's wife or the king's child, or the wife of the husband or such, child of the father. An example of an event, the world to come, is represented as a banquet, both in rabbinic and in Jesus' parables. Sometimes very similar combinations of metaphors produce rather similar parables. Compare, for instance, Jesus' parable of the harvest workers with the rabbinic parable of the short day. We'll do that in the next panel. And then compare Jesus' parable of the day laborers with the rabbinic parable of the skillful worker. We'll do that in the following panels. Huh? So here's the harvest workers. Jesus' parable, Luke 10:2, he told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Notice this in Mishnah Avot 2:15. "The day is short, the work is great, the laborers are sluggish, the reward is much, and the master of the house is urgent." Here's the parable of the day laborers in Matthew 20. "The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard." I jump over several verses. "About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, 'Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?' 'Because no one has hired us,' they answered. He said to them, 'You also go and work in my vineyard.' When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, 'Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first.' The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came, and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more, but each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. 'These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour,' they said, 'and you've made them equal to us who've borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day.' But he answered one of them, 'Friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go.' I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Are you envious because I'm generous? Compare that with the rabbinic parable of a skillful worker. A king had a vineyard in which he engaged many laborers, one of whom was especially apt and skillful. What did the king do? He took his labor from his work and walked through the garden conversing with him. The laborers came for their hire in the evening. The skillful laborer also appeared among them and received a full day's wage from the king. The other laborers were angry at this and said, "We've toiled the whole day while this man has worked but 2 hours. Why does the king give him the full hire even as to us?" The king said to them, "Why are you angry? Through his skill he's done more in the 2 hours than you have all day." It's interesting that these two parables, the setting is very similar. The message is rather different. But the setting is that of day laborers working in, I think it's a vineyard in this case, but whatever, it doesn't matter. And in both of them, it appears to be that we are comparing this to God's reward at the end of the age to those who have served him during this life, if you like. In both of them, there are complaints at the end of the day. And in both of them, the complaints involve someone who has worked a shorter period of time but is getting the full wage. So what I think we can see here is a cultural situation that would have been perhaps fairly common, and that is hiring day laborers for harvest and perhaps needing more day laborers and going out and getting some more at different times and days so that you may wind up with some people who work lesser or longer hours. And under normal circumstances, they would be paid different amounts of money. But here, for two somewhat different reasons, some workers that work shorter are paid an equal amount to those who work the whole day. And that's what we have going on here. We've got, as I say, a different message. The one of them is that this guy was more skillful. The other one, perhaps, is that the person received what he needed, even though he did not, in fact, have as much time to work. And we need to think through some of those more clearly on the details of that. But that's basically the picture here. The similarity need not indicate that either is borrowed from the other. In any case, the rabbinic parable is later. But I don't think the rabbis, by the time that Jesus had been crucified, were willing to borrow teachings from him. But I think basically what we see is similar cultural situation in these cases. Well, that's a very quick tour of rabbinic parables. You will find, if you study them, they are not real easily available. A book was written, published by Zondervan, entitled "They Also Taught in Parables," which gives some material by Harvey MacArthur and Robert Johnston on rabbinic parables. And this was a spin-off of Robert Johnston's thesis he did, a rather massive work in which he looks at all 324 of the parables from before 200. And those are places where you can find some of that material. I do a sketch on rabbinic parables in the InterVarsity's Dictionary of New Testament Background as well, which sketches some of this material I've discussed here. Well, that's the end of our talk. I have this remark that comes from the end of Jesus' parables, the kingdom, where Jesus says, "Every teacher of law who's been instructed about the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old." The picture here is, again, in a parable, an analogy between a householder and a teacher of the law, a scribe of the kingdom, if you like. And just as a owner of a house, when he's entertaining guests, likes to show the old heirlooms as well as some new treasures he's received, so a person who is a student of God's word and of his kingdom should be one that's always learning, and so has things he's known for many years that he can teach people about, and also things that he has just learned. So may we, if we are faithful students of God's word, be like that, always learning and coming to further and further knowledge of the truth and sharing it with others.